To Iceland now. 20 years ago, teens in Iceland were among the heaviest underage drinkers in Europe. 40% of all 15- and 16-year-olds said they were drunk in any given month, and they were smoking everything. So fast forward to 2017. Iceland now has the fewest drinking, smoking, drug-taking kids on the continent. It's amazing. So what happened? And can it be replicated? Well, part of the credit can be given to an American who got his PhD in the early 70s. He realized people had different personality types and reasons for using drugs, but basically it was to deal with stress. And maybe getting kids naturally high would keep them from artificial highs down the road. Harvey Milkman now teaches psychology at the Metropolitan State University of Denver. He's also a visiting professor at Reykjavik University in Iceland. His work there was profiled in Mosaic magazine. Professor Milkman, welcome, or should I say velkomin?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Before we start talking about Iceland, briefly tell us what it was you realized when you were researching people back in the 70s who were using, that was the first wave of heroin and amphetamine abuse.
We found that, sure enough, they did have different personality styles, that the heroin users were characterized by passive withdrawal in terms of their style of coping with stress, and the amphetamine users were opposite. They were characterized by active confrontation, so they were active, extroverted people who were playing all-night music, they were doing construction work, and when they were under stress, they wanted to amp up their level of active confrontation with their environment.
Well, so you found, okay, two different ways that people were using drugs to deal with stress. As you said, heroin users just wanted to get away from it, numbing it. Amphetamine users, you know, confronting it. But then you had the aha moment was when you realized, wait, it's not about the drugs. Of course, that was the big problem. It's about the way they coped with stress. That's what they were abusing.
That's right. You know, we had that aha moment that it was the style of coping that they were becoming addicted to. And so that led me to a conversation with a very renowned brain scientist, Stanley Sunderworth. And he said, almost immediately, of course, they're getting addicted to changes in their brain chemistry. And then we knew we were onto something.
Right. This idea that it's how you were feeling that you were then dealing with the drugs, and your thinking was, well, why don't we see if we can change how they're feeling before they get to the drugs? And so your thinking translated into what with kids?
Well, we knew that the brain was a giant pharmaceutical factory that manufactured its own mind-altering chemicals. And if people are getting addicted to self-induced changes in brain chemistry that could be translated into drugs or behaviors, why not start a natural highs movement where they could become influence to change their brain chemistry in positive ways that would benefit themselves and the society. And so in 1992, a legendary African-American dance choreographer, Cleo Parker Robinson, and I were awarded $1.2 million to start a natural highs program for at-risk youth. And we gave them music and art and dance and whatever they really wanted to learn in the area of healthy recreational activities. And then we also gave them a mindfulness program so that they could learn the skills to manage their own thinking. And we were tremendously successful with that. And that's when the conversations really started with Iceland about offering people healthy ways to change their brain chemistry.
Part of me is saying, well, this makes so much sense. You know, this
right.
is what kids used to have in school. There were tons of after-school activities. Now you take this to Iceland. How bad was it in Iceland?
Well, it was really a frightening scene on a Friday night. There were hordes of drunk teenagers, and they were in-your-face drunk and sometimes shouting obscenities and rowdy, and then you really didn't want to be on the streets. So it was people were really becoming concerned in Iceland about what was happening to their teenage population.
You helped come up with a program called Youth in Iceland, and it covers every area of life. It starts with questionnaires to every school in Iceland, you know, anonymous. But then talk about the pillars of the program. Parents got involved, families got involved. What happened?
Policymakers, researchers, practitioners, people who work with kids, school teachers, coaches, nurses, doctors, and even corporations. So they all got together and decided we're going to have this as a kind of a collaborative effort to help kids. So it's important to realize that working with the surveys, they discovered that the things that really stood out in terms of what was correlated with high drug abuse were how strong were the relationships with the family, how much time was the family spending with the kids, what kind of peer groups were the kids hanging around with, and really important was the available recreational activities.
So after getting the results of the survey, as you said, all aspects of Icelandic life get involved. Laws are changed. It's illegal to buy tobacco under 18 or alcohol under 20. Advertising for both were banned. Laws were passed prohibiting kids 13 to 16 from being outside after 10 p.m. in winter or midnight in summer. But I love this piece. Parents have to sign all sorts of pledges. They have to go to talks on spending time with kids, and they're told it's not quality time. It's quantity time. Explain that.
You can't have a once a month taking the kid to the movies and call it good. So it has to be quality and quantity of time. So how much time are you spending with your kid every day and during the week? And then people were able to get that message. And the whole country got the idea that it really is important to spend time with your kids. And so from 1997 to 2012, the time spent with parents doubled for 15 to 16-year-old kids, and then they had a corresponding reduction in substance abuse and other problem behaviors.
Wow, it's just incredible. Parents had to sign pledges that they wouldn't allow their kids to have unsupervised parties, they wouldn't buy alcohol from minors. They'd keep an eye on the well-being of other children, and parents will recognize this, so that when your kid says, everybody else can, you don't have to just say, I don't care about everybody else. You can say, no, they're not. You know, we've all
right.
signed this pledge.
And I think another part of it, Robin, is the leisure card. Every family knows that the government is providing them with a voucher to give their kids art, music, dance. So there's basically a budget of about $250 per family per kid. Ping pong, badminton, soccer, gymnastics, all the kind of athletic activities you can imagine. But in addition, following the lead of that Cleo Parker Robinson and I developed, the music, the art, the dance. Not every kid wants to do sports, and they can self-select, which is really connected to their abilities and their passions and so on.
You know, again, this makes so much sense. You know, if you're in a town where, you know, just a handful of kids make the basketball team and everybody else just becomes feral, you know, in the afternoon
right.
with nothing to do. But what about cost?
So it's really a combination of government support and corporate support and tax support. And look, $250 a year is a very small price compared to the what it costs to when a kid becomes adjudicated and requires
yeah.
probation or incarceration or something like that. It's a minor expense.
But it's not just the cost of joining. It's hiring all the people who run programs. I mean, you know, somebody in America might look at this and say, oh, that's just more government interference in our lives.
Right.
And by the way, you're talking about millions of people here as opposed to just, you know, thousands in Iceland. Do you think it's transferable?
Well, you're right. I mean, the ratio is about 1,000 to 1. So to every one person in Iceland, there's 1,000 people in the United States. But we can think about different municipalities for sure in the United States that can replicate the Icelandic model. I mean, we have 17 different countries in Europe that are doing it across 35 different municipalities. We have a Youth in Europe project. Certainly there would be a beneficial effect. A special sort of aspect of solving these problems is to recognize community by community what the problems are and then tackle them in terms of the resources that the community has, mm-hmm. let them solve some of their own problems through their own agency.
And in Iceland, we talked about the phenomenal results. I mean, repeat those. Really, was it just, is it gone from in-your-face drunk kids to deserted streets?
Well, it really did. I mean, it went from drunk in the past 30 days, 42% of the 16-year-olds were doing that and went down to 7%. And in terms of daily smoking, it went from 23% to 3%. In terms of using cannabis in the past year, it went from 17% to 5%. So the results are remarkable. They're astounding. And we're seeing it in Europe, and we should be having elements of it deployed throughout the United States as well.
I can think of families that would just give anything to have this, to give their kids a natural high before they even think of a pharmaceutical high. That's Harvey Milkman, a psychologist at the Metropolitan State University of Denver, but also visiting professor at Reykjavik University in Iceland. Harvey, thank you.
Thank you.